Hey, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of the Strand Tennis Center podcast, filled with tips, advice, tennis, not tennis, just life advice, too, whatever you need. Like it on YouTube. Share it on the podcast as well. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Strand Tennis Center podcast. I'm so happy to have Mickey Bruckner here. He runs a great local business, the Annex Sports Performance Center, right down the street, dealing with some great athletes. We've known each other for quite a long time. I think, God, back in 2008, I think, Mick?
Over 10 years. Yeah.
I've always wanted to have him on because he not only runs a great sports facility, but a great business as well. We were talking, and I was going to ask you, we started this about, Santi, about 100 episodes ago. You started yours, what? You have 15, 20 episodes with you?
I think I'm like 10 or 12 in. I'm a newborn when it comes to the podcast.
Listen. I'm new, too, compared to it. I mean, between Ferris and those guys that started in Rogan in like 13 or 14. Crazy.
Yeah.
But what made you want to do it?
Well, just a lot of conversations that I have with athletes, parents, coaches, just people in my circle of individuals. And just, constantly a lot of the same conversations I was having. Just things that I feel like are just important to have conversations around, right? Like where people need value in their lives, right? There's so much information out there. And I felt like, I've been training athletes for almost 20 years now. I've run a business for 18 years now. I feel like I have a decent amount of context and experience. So I was like, you know what? I'm also at the point of my career from owning a business and developing as an entrepreneur. I see the value in it. And it's an opportunity to just have meaningful conversations around performance, around training, around running a business, and stuff like that. So,
well, that's great humility, because I know people that start a podcast after a week of thinking about something and never doing it. And it takes a lot. I did the same thing. I mean, we ran a business very similar to yours, like 2008, 2007.
Yep.
Didn't say a thing because I didn't know shit, right? You're just trying to figure it out. Then you're like, all right, I got some time to even think.
Yep.
Because when you run a business, you have no time to think, let alone talk to your spouse. You come home and you're like, all right, I want to just stare at the walls for a while, because you're in a customer service business.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with people all the time, and your wife's like, well, you're not present. Well, there's seven things going on in my head, and I've just talked to 35 different people.
Yep.
I just need to shut up and say nothing. So when you feel like you got some breathing room, which is great.
Yeah.
You can actually have a conversation, take 30 minutes out of your day.
Yeah.
And that's great to take that chunk out. At least you can think. Contemplate. I'm going to bounce around all over the place. My number one question to you is, we asked all these college coaches about the transfer portal, and I wanted to ask your perspective on it, being an athlete.
Yep.
Being that you transferred.
Yep.
When you were in Seton Hall.
Correct.
What do you think about it? Pros and cons, then we'll get in deeper.
You know, sometimes going back to my own experience, I feel like transferring and moving schools wasn't something that I took lightly. Like, I very much believe in finish what you start.
Yep.
But in looking back at that experience and that change in my life was really important for my development as a young man. And so I'm happy I did it. I think I would have done it again if I had the opportunity. That being said, it wasn't a decision that came lightly to me.
Yeah.
Like, I knew it affected the coaches that brought me in, and I knew it was just greater than just myself. I think, back then, kids had a lot more skin in the game, and the universities they chose, there's a lot, much bigger process that went into it.
Sure.
Now, I don't think there's quite as much of this mindset of, well, I'm going to stick in a situation that's challenging, do the best I can, create opportunities for myself, and see where those opportunities lead. It's more or less, well, this isn't the right situation for me. I'm immediately going to leave. And I feel like it takes out some of the accountability to the athletes and to the coaches in some respect, because, they move just as on the flip side, they move quite often as well. So I think it limits the accountability from the athlete's standpoint. I think it's teaching the wrong message, right? Because if you're a collegiate athlete, I was a collegiate athlete with hopes of playing professional sports. Didn't happen. Statistically, most collegiate athletes don't play professional sports. So if the message we're teaching them is, if you don't like the situation you're in, just leave and quit, what is that teaching them about life in terms of facing adversities? You and I, we've run a business. We've been in scenarios where like it's challenging, right?
Yeah.
Like part of life is being able to deal with challenges.
Yep.
And if we're giving them an easy out in college when they are probably the most receptive to like development and just building character, if that's the options that we're creating and the precedent that we're setting for them, what's going to happen when they're faced with real life challenges after school when there's much higher stakes at play? So I think it's a difficult topic, but I do also think there's situations where a coach leaves, an athlete was committed to that coach, because I've had athletes do the same. So I think that for the most part, that every situation has nuance. Yeah. And so I think it's just,
there's good and bad in both, because it gives the kid more control, but then there's a bad part of that to give them more control, because I don't know if you've had it. You have a kid come, you're training a kid, and the coach is mean to me, and I want to, like, don't go into the portal and transfer. You have to suck those things up.
Yep.
Right? I mean, it gets too clickbaity almost, and I'm just going to click and transfer. And you, that's a big decision.
It is.
Would you have made it quicker, you think, back then, or would you have still? It's hard, knowing you would have grown up in a different generation, blah, blah, blah. Do you think you would have taken more time, or do you think it would have been quicker?
I probably would have been about the same.
Okay.
Just knowing the way I ruminate on things. I'm not like a, I don't act impulsively when it comes to like big life decisions, when it comes like stuff like that. So
what do you tell a kid that comes up to you? Have you had this experience where they come up to you and they go, listen, Mickey, this coach sucks, I want to transfer, I guess it's a case by case, but out of 10 cases, do you have a percentage of where you say the kid is just too emotional, or he's got a real good excuse or a real good reason?
I think it's something where, have you had a conversation with your current coach and made him aware or her aware of where you're at? And have you had dialogue with them to say, like, I'm not happy, I feel like I need to create an opportunity? And if through that dialogue, the coach is like, there is no opportunity here, then that's the decision you have to make, both in both directions, right? You have to understand, like, it has consequences, but it also, it could be a good decision. Like, for me, it was a good decision, even though it was a really tough decision to make. But I think it has to be something that parents need to create the opportunity for dialogue with the parents, with the coaches, making sure, like, it's not just an irrational, like, quick decision. I think if you do that and you create an opportunity for people to communicate and lay it all out on the table and say, like, all right, what's the cost if I stay? What's the cost if I leave? And understanding both sides. And at the end of the day, the athlete is the one that has to make that decision, because they're the one that's going to have to live with it, both in a good or bad direction. So,
Jesus, Santi, for Christ's sakes, get it together. What is it, broken? Look at this thing. The whole thing is bending. Anyways, Mick, I want to transfer right now. I want to go to the portal. Shit. It makes me think, because when we were talking to the LSU women's head coach, and he was like, he doesn't try to transfer in midseason. That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
He still wants to stick going into the portal with transfers offseason, because the dynamic is too difficult. I mean, when you were on a team, how was the culture? Like, how did you... Was Arizona State better than Seton Hall? I mean, culture-wise, the guys, or was it the coaching for you? I mean, what's the most important thing? If the coach is a bear, but you love your teammates, or your teammates are rough and you love your coach, like, what's the most important dynamic?
I'd say it's got to be a balance, right? Like, your coach has got to be somebody you want to, you know, to play for and potentially feel like they have your best interest. Essentially, if they tell you one thing and they're going to deliver on that, and they're going to be honest with their word. I think culture is set by the coach, but it's upheld by the athletes. And so you can have a coach who's pushing forward a culture of, you know, of accountability and integrity and all that. But if you have a couple athletes who are not on board, it ruins things. So I think it's got to be a mixture of both. I would probably say, from an athlete's perspective, I think if you have good rapport with your teammates, I think that goes a really long way. you'd probably be willing to overlook maybe some challenges you face with a coach if you have a really good rapport with your your teammates.
We've had experiences where they didn't like the coach, but the team liked each other so much that it was almost like, we're going to win despite the coach, so they stayed together in those situations. So I guess if you like your teammates, it's a huge factor. And when we were kids, we're used to coaches, you know, just berating you. That was the way it was. Yeah. I think it's changed a lot, coaching. You have to be much more delicate. I appreciated a coach like, I don't know, lack of a better word, just being a bastard to me, because at least he was straight with me.
Yeah.
And at least I knew where I stood. And I didn't like so many compliments because it made me work for things. I mean, everybody, to me, wants a pat on the back, and I'm sure you don't like this whole everybody gets an award. We've been through those things all the time. How do you deal? We go to the business side. You started 2006. Grown this into a super successful business. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Parents, we like to promise them the process, not the results. That's what I like to say. I can promise you the process. We'll create a scenario where your kid can succeed, but it's up to him whether to succeed.
Yeah.
How do you handle a parent? Is it the same process, or do you sometimes get parents that just, and we have it sometimes, parents just have to go, and unfortunately it is what it is. I mean, give me your trials and tribulations through that.
I mean, those are definitely challenging situations. I think given our business and our model, we do like a pretty extensive like intake and evaluation on every athlete. And in that process, we're getting to know the athlete, we're getting to know the dynamics of him and his parents, what his or her goals are. Where do they want to take sports? Are they just trying to maximize their level as a high school athlete, or are they trying to become a college or a professional athlete? It's important to understand these things because it gives us an opportunity to look long term. Because everything we're doing with an athlete is you have to balance the short term return on investment and the long term. And so I think through that intake and evaluation process, we're trying to understand what does success look like to that athlete? What does success look like to that parent? And then saying, okay, based on what you're telling us, that may or may not be a realistic or unrealistic expectation. So I think managing expectations up front, getting them to understand like, all right, what you're looking for us to do is really not possible. And what you're looking to do is more of a 1 to 2 year process, not a 3 to 6 month process. And so I think if you manage expectations up front with parents, and really just make it as black and white and as binary as possible and leave less open to interpretation, I think it saves a lot of headaches in the long run, right?
Yeah. I agree. Have you, it's to say the least.
Yeah.
Because you got to lean into being straightforward with them and say, you know the numbers. It's 1% to play Division I out of all the athletes in high school. So if you're looking for more than that, you're just looking in. I got it. Look at that. See how perfect. You have to have reactions all the time, Mickey. Mickey used to play baseball. I'm surprised he didn't see that with the corner of his eye. Shit. You have to lean into them going, this is how difficult it is. If you want a 1% life, you have to do 1% work.
Yeah.
If you're not willing to do that work, you're not going to be successful even if you're talented. On your end with kids, have you ever, like, what's the balance? If you get great talented kids and their IQ's not great and it's hard to deal with, like, do you find kids less mentally tough these days? We asked this of Sergey Brylin, who played for the Devils, of course. We had him in. And he feels like they're not as tough, but he feels like you can create some mental toughness. You can make somebody mentally tough, but not if they're you're at a huge baseline of mentally toughness, it's hard to get there.
Yeah.
But what are your experiences? If a kid's just weak in a certain situation, can you make him stronger? Like, he's pitching, and he's in a stressful situation. He kind of just crumbles. Can you get a kid to manage that situation?
It's tough. I think building mental toughness is something. It's definitely something that can be improved upon. I think generally in our culture now, the thing I see the biggest challenge with is delayed gratification. I think it's not that kids aren't tough. Like, they haven't had to exercise that challenge. Maybe in sports they do, and I think that's the beautiful thing about sports. In real life, there's less and less that challenges kids. I think there's also less people that are holding the standard. I think kids get a lot of slack nowadays. And so I think I don't think they're given enough opportunities to be challenged, because it's like, I feel like that's a muscle. Like for me, training builds toughness, right? If you challenge an athlete, like the only way an athlete's going to get better is if we stress them from a physiological standpoint. And over time, they adapt to that stress and their ceiling starts to increase. The same could be said, and now I'm not a psychiatrist or a mental skills coach, but in my experience, I think if you give athletes enough experiences where you put them in scenarios where maybe they feel like they need to overextend to achieve any goal or anything for that matter, if you set them up for success and create opportunity for daily wins, and they start to stack wins and start to see, oh, this was tough, but I was able to do it. Yeah. And if you create that strategy for them and the opportunity for them to see that just consistency over time, then I think it's kind of like what Angela Duckworth talks in the book Grit, right? Like,
okay.
Grit over time equals massive success. But if you're not able to create the opportunity to build that, then it's the expectation that it's just going to happen out of thin air. I wouldn't say kids are any less tough, but I just think the biggest thing is the delayed gratification thing, from my experience.
Yeah, I think, I tell Santi this all the time. My father's like 91. He grew up in the Depression. It's like, just after it, he can't, it's just a different, generations. I think you get farther away from these great generations where they're in World War II and these things, and these kids are worried about Frappuccinos and what they're getting, and instead of it being like, I can't believe that I'm living in a country where I can actually go and get those things and everything. It's just the farther you get away from those,
I think I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I think what they are categorizing as challenges in the grand scheme of things, in our perspective, aren't really challenges. Now, to them, they are. So we can't necessarily belittle that, because to them and their perspective, it is.
I agree.
But I think as adults who have more wisdom, who have more perspective and experience, it's our job to create scenarios where they can, again, stack up those wins on a day-to-day basis and really give them the opportunity to test that. And give them the grace to fail from time to time and make them understand that part of growth is failing and learning from your mistakes.
There's plenty of tough kids out there. There are.
Yeah.
I think in general the sample size is a little bit less tough than there is, but look, I agree.
It's different. It's definitely different. And I mean, you and I have been coaching for a long time. The athlete we work with today is way different than it was 15 years ago. And I think maybe that's the context we need to go about looking at this.
Even with the holistic approach of being able to be trained at a facility like yours. I remember Bill Raftery, who was the great basketball player, and he used to work out at Brook Lake over here. And I was working out in the gym one time, and he works for ESPN. And I was like, he goes, when we played basketball, we didn't even do a stretch. It was like a toe touch. You run out there and run. Like, there was none of this whole physio program, everything. What it's just become from technology and everything, it just lends itself for it to be even, not coddled, but you have just so much more for these kids. And sometimes you'll get parents to go in here and go, I need a physio, I need this, I need that, and you haven't even seen them play yet sometimes.
Yeah.
Because it's just the way society is. Like,
yep.
We're just so used to it, we have everything at our fingertips, that we're used to having such a holistic approach or having so many people work with one athlete. As you transfer from training, playing, you were working in Arizona State, you get an opportunity to come out here. As this whole process, first of all, you got to give me some general trials and tribulations, just as business wise. I need to hear one story where, like, we had a story here where we were going to open and we didn't have enough exit doors. And I said, well, there's four exit doors over there, but the square footage and this and that. So I had to cut out a wall that was like $30,000 just so somebody could have an exit that we'd never used.
Yeah.
So things like that. You're ready to open and there's 30 grand. Like, you don't have to give me a monetary one. Give me one where you're like, oh, I think I passed this point, and then something happens. Like, give me something.
Well, I mean, I feel like owning a business, like it's always the fear of what like you're not prepared for.
Okay.
That potentially keeps you up at night. I'd say the biggest one for us, you know, we are now in our third iteration of spaces in our current location, and we're in the process of trying to figure out what we're doing next, because I would say we've somewhat outgrown our facility where we're at currently. But when we moved in to where we are now, we upgraded. I think we increased our space by like 2 or 3x.
Okay.
And I remember the day they completely demoed everything and they hadn't started the build out. And it was in a summertime, all the garage, because that's four big bay garage doors in the back. And I walked in and I'm just looking around. I'm like, holy shit, what did I get myself into? And it was a pretty poignant moment in my like evolution as a businessman and an entrepreneur. But I think for me, like as an athlete, I always felt like I did better in scenarios where, like, I don't want to say my back was up against the wall, but like I had to be tested. But like stuff like that is like, you know, I think we're in the process of like, I love to see my business grow. But I'm not at the sake of like just for growth's sake, right? Sure. I want to maintain the quality of what we're doing, the services we're providing for our athletes and our clients. And I think if we can continue to do that and still, you know, create opportunities for growth for myself, for my team, I think that's important. But I wouldn't say like, you know, scenarios where, you know, dealing with challenging athletes, dealing with challenging parents, you know, just situations, like I said, that you're not prepared for, that you're not expecting to come down the road, and you know, here they are.
I didn't tell you this story, Santi. We, you know this, we had two courts in the back in the beginning, right? So we had the florist in the front, we just had a curtain, right? And unbeknownst to me, that wasn't legal, right? We were supposed to have a demising wall, right? Two separate businesses. I did this for 8 years. I was just like, all right, this is great. I can hear people talking, getting flowers and all this shit. So then I expand, we get the rest of the space, and the town guy comes in and goes, this is illegal what you're doing here. I said, well, it's over. We're expanding. You're going to have to put up a wall and tear it down. I said, what? I said, is there any way we can figure this out? This is what happens. You know, I love towns, but they're supposed to support you. So he goes, yeah. You have to build a wall and then tear it. I said, and after I spoke to him, we actually finally worked it out. But I'm like, oh, my God, imagine if I got to build a $20,000 wall to rip it down. To close the permit, so to speak. I was like,
yeah.
Like things like that are just crazy. You're just juggling so many different things. I remember, because I took training from Timmy. I mean, Timmy's
yep,
great
that's
over there.
Right.
He's one of your trainers. It's awesome. I've learned so much. Their training is incredible. I remember back then when you started this group training.
Yep.
And it was very innovative to do with athletes. Like things like that. Have you ever doing this enough? Did the ideas just come into your head? Like some ideas come to me as they're just going on. I'm like, why don't we just do this, because you're just stressed and like something's happening, you're like, I'll do this. Do they come when you're just chilling, or do they come during the action of saying, oh, why don't we just put these two guys together and train them?
Well, I mean, the model I interned and worked under in Arizona was a semi-private model.
Okay.
And in high school, I grew up training in like a big group model, like the Parisi Speed School type of model, where everybody comes in and you might have 12 athletes in a training session. They're all doing the same exact thing, lifting, sprinting, change of direction, all that stuff. And in the model I interned, trained under, and also worked as a coach in Arizona, it was semi-private, where athletes were assessed. They were given their own program. They were still training together. But they were new, like they were able to accommodate for the nuance of that individual athlete. And so I felt like that was just a way better, more practical approach, especially for the populations we were working with. For younger, less advanced athletes who have a very low training age and just need well-structured training, probably don't need to be as nuanced with them. But the more specialized athlete who's, you know, they've trained for 1 to 2 years, they have now specified the sport they're playing in, and they've established the fact that they're going to play after high school, then you're starting to specialize and do something more unique. But I wouldn't say it was like a completely organic thought that came to me. So,
athlete-wise, what's the general intake for you?
Mm-hmm.
Are there kids trying to make their high school team? Or are there mostly kids trying to be professional at your gym?
I would say the reputation that we've created it's definitely skewed to the more, I don't want to say elite because I don't want to alienate the athletes who are trying to, you know, just maximize their high school career. But I would say a higher percentage of the athletes that I'm assessing and we're assessing, generally the goal long term is to play at least college baseball or college sports.
So now does it go in regards to what we're just talking business now, Santi? Santi, pay attention. is it word of mouth then in regards
mostly,
to your business?
Pretty much all of it's word of mouth.
Because it's such a niche. And it, you can tell, I mean, you can, for everybody's not clear, it's mostly baseball players or is it all athletes?
It's all athletes. Okay. I would say we're heavily skewed towards overhead throwing athletes. So I work with mainly baseball and quarterbacks now. And so it's usually word of mouth. The only money we really spend on marketing is through like the social media efforts. You know, so we're at the point now where we're starting to gain inquiries through that, through Instagram and things like that. But for the most part, we've built our business on personal referrals and word of mouth.
So growth.
Yeah.
Where do you have 5-year goals? Do you have plans that you put in your head, or are they just kind of roundabout ideas that you're looking to? Are you looking to grow farther outside the state or inside the state? You're looking to.
Yeah. Well, we're in the process. We're just about to open up a space in Rye, New York.
Awesome.
We work with a hitting coach who comes to our facility 2 days a week, and we're starting a space up with him in Rye within probably around the beginning of the new year. So stuff like that, you know, the way I see growth is create other facilities if there's opportunity and build those facilities much like we built the annex, right? Start small, one coach, they're kind of wearing all the hats and building the business and, you know, building all the relationships, doing all the coaching. And then as we need more time from he or she and more athletes start coming in, we'll create more opportunities for them.
So how did you do it yourself in regards to, you know, you got to start to empower people, delegate, give people room to run. Are you doing it based on need or expectation? Did you find yourself years ago going, I just can't do all these jobs, I need people to do it? Or did you hire first and say, okay, I know I'm not going to be able to do these jobs? How did the process work for you?
Yeah, this was, I would say, as my evolution as a business owner was the toughest one for me. I think what really allowed me to build my business was on sound training. Okay. I think that was the foundation. And I think that's the most important thing when you're starting a performance training or just any service-based industry. Like if your product is no good and you're trying to just spend more money on marketing and you just have people going in a revolving door, that's a problem. And I think the biggest thing that allowed us to be successful and manage growth for a long-term standpoint is our training product was top-notch. Yeah. And so from a delegation standpoint, I think the biggest thing that limited me and held me back for a while was quite simply my ego, right? I wanted to be the best coach. Sure. And I still do. But I realized probably about 3-4 years ago, I think it was actually, I used COVID as an opportunity to reverse engineer the freedom I wanted in life. And so I was like, you know what, if I let go of this and create opportunities for my coaches and create avenues for them to grow and them to be like the top coach, and that's, it's only going to help me in the long run, because now I have time back in my day to spend working on the business. I have 3 kids, so I can go, like, I go coach all my kids in their respective sports.
Awesome.
So I've reinvested money back into the facility, back into the coaching team, making sure like their level of coaching is the best it could be. So creating education, continuing education and things like that. So that, having that like epiphany was really important.
It's a hard process, Mick.
It really is.
I mean, I was in the same boat. You're teaching all these lessons and you're like, oh, well, this person really wants me. I'm the only one. Like, there's somebody better. There's someone that can do it. I always say, and I always tell Santi that if somebody can spend 100% of time on the one thing and I've got to do 20, they're going to do it better eventually.
Yeah, for sure.
Let them do it better. And the fact that you empower the person and tell this client that this person's great and they are great, it's a good value prop for you as well.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to get over that, to say, all right, or when you get angry, which we always do, you go, I'm just going to do everything, which is the stupidest, most immature thing. And you should just keep going, okay, I just need to keep educating, put your energy into education, education. And the more you educate people, the more you're going to be able to, and they're actually, happen to be too, they're doing a better job than I am. They really are. You look up and you go, And I realized that I'm a guy that can do something. I'm a good at starting a business, 0 to 5, 0 to 8 years.
Yep.
But they're better at the technical details.
Yeah.
I suck at those. I'll make mistakes all the time. Let
yep.
them do it. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
It's hard to give that up. I know, because it's like your baby, right? It's
yeah,
like your kid.
For sure.
And you're like giving it away, and you're like, if they screw it up. But look, even if they do a job and it's 80% as good as you do it, it's still good enough.
Yeah.
You just hire 10 of those.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I think the beautiful thing is now you're creating upward mobility and opportunity for your staff. And, you know, so, you know, but it costs money to bring in good people. And that's something I've always, like, I prioritize that so that at the end of the day, I want the outputs from my business not to be directly tied to my inputs,
yeah.
right? If I'm trading time for money and,
yeah.
and I mean, that's great if we're making money, but if I'm, you know, if I'm away from my family and never, and I have no quality of life, like, well, what's the purpose
yeah.
of it? And I think that's something that you as a business owner, like, what's your priority? Like, for me, priority for me was creating some freedom and more time with my family and opportunities to look at other ways of growing the business, not just spending 15 hours a day on the training floor, which that's how I built the business,
sure.
but it's not how I'm going to grow the
You're
business.
Right. It's like pulling the right lever. You're now can
yes.
find the right lever to pull to say, okay, with this one move, I can do 10x instead of 20 instead
yep.
of being trapped. Like, it's the same thing. Like, I love teaching, but then you're trapped on that court and you start
yep.
to feel it. And you're like, there's so many more places I can touch here. And there's a great pro
yep.
that probably knows more than me now because they're younger and they're learning this information.
Yeah.
What am I doing? I'm just doing it because I feel like it's just yeah, it's that. It's the ego or it's your need. It's it again. And once you understand how to pull that lever and to go, hey, so what are you going to do? So in regards to Rye, you have a nice person you feel like, because you're not going to be driving back and forth.
No, that to be honest, that was what's been the delay is
yeah.
is finding that right person.
Yeah.
I feel like we're close to making that, you know, finding that fit. But at the end of the day, like, same thing. It's like give them the resources, give them, you know, as much of my knowledge and empower them and give them the, you know, the opportunities and, you know, guide them along the way, expect them to make mistakes, you know, because, like, look, I am where I am because a couple people believed and saw something in me, right? And it's tough to make a living in this business, right? In whether,
right.
you know, performance training, personal training, whatever. And I think I would not be here today without the effort of other people and who've poured into me from a mentorship standpoint. And so if I can help create opportunities for other individuals, just like I was given, then, like, look, I'm a coach by heart, right? Whether I'm coaching athletes or coaching my team, like, I want to help get people better and get them to where they want to go. And I think, you know, it comes in all shapes and sizes. So.
Well, Mick, listen, I appreciate it. No, give me one, but like your schedule now, since you've, it's not eased up, but just changed. Are you able to, like, drive the kids to school and do those kind of things?
Yeah.
And then, like you said, you could. Are you, is your schedule, say, in the office? I don't know. Mine, luckily, I get here at 11 or 12, and I can get
yep.
out at 4 and
yep.
you know, manage some things from home. How's the schedule
yeah.
look?
I used to always joke that I used to have a 5 to 9 job, and now it's a true 9 to 5.
There you go. Awesome.
I never forget about the annex, yeah. but, like, I'm home for dinner every night. I coach my kids on the weekends. I coach them during the week. And, you know, my team is very gracious with allowing me to go do that. And, you know, it's way better than what it used to be. So,
well, you busted your ass. And you
yep.
deserve it. Well, six, like I'm always looking at something. Success is lagging. Everybody wants, it takes 10 years to be good at anything.
Yeah.
And success is a lagging indicator, and you just got to suck it up until you get to that point.
Yeah. I think, I look at, people always say, like, you know, you create your own luck, and it takes time to do that.
Yep.
Right. Like, I was lucky that I was I found this opportunity early in life, but the luck that I'm experiencing now is stuff that, you know, it's taken me 17, 18 years to build.
Yep.
And it's I feel like there's a lot of things that are, you know, getting traction and opportunities that are coming just because, like, I've just spent the last, you know, almost 2 decades building these opportunities, and, like, they're just now starting to come to fruition. And
compounds,
so,
just like money, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then my brain, I don't know if you do it, I start to feel guilty, and I can't feel guilty. I got to go, okay, this happened for a reason. Like, I'm like,
yep.
I shouldn't have some time. Like, I don't deserve it. Yeah. And then I start to fuck with my head. And Munger said that. Charlie Munger is great. He just died. He said, it's not being the smartest person. Just don't do anything stupid.
Yes.
Like, don't do something dumb now and, like, yep. bother somebody over here.
Avoid ruin.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mickey, I could talk all day.
Appreciate
Thank you. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, this was fun.
This is not fun. Santi, you got to go to training center is the best. I'm telling you. Thanks, guys.
Have a good day.
Hey, everybody. Hope you liked the podcast. Please share it with your friends, anybody that you know, anybody that's into tennis, anybody that's into bettering themselves. Share it.